Curators of Horror.
We're your curators.
That's Katie.
That's Emrys, and here at the Curators of Horror, we believe that there is a perfect horror movie out there for everyone.
So whether you're a lover or a hater or somewhere in between, we are on a mission to find you the perfect horror movie.
Each episode, we convince an unsuspecting victim to join us on the podcast and to learn about their unique relationship with horror.
Each of us picks the perfect horror movie for our guest. We then strap them to a sofa, make them watch the movies, and then talk about it afterwards.
But who's the best curator? We're in competition, so each episode our guest will pick which film was their favourite and which one scared them the most.
Episode 3!
This is just really confusing to me that you're, like, starting the episodes again because it's season 2, because I'm like, wait, what? Have I gone down like a wormhole and you've just removed all the other episodes that we've done? Because I just work on like the numbers, you know, I forget that there's been a new season and, so
we
and
did,
all that.
We did 26 episodes in the first season, which was like a year.
Yeah.
And you won, obviously.
Yeah.
So to make it possible for me to win, we had to start again.
Yeah, but I don't know. It throws me. Dear listener, if it throws you too, you're not alone. We should have a support group of some kind. I don't know what day of the week it is, let alone what episode number it is. So, you know, it always used to surprise me when you were like 24 or something like that. And now you're like 3. And I'm like, what the fuck is happening? Numbers and shit. I don't know. I think it's just an indication of where I'm at in my life right now.
Or if you're new to this listener, then welcome to the third episode.
The third episode ever. Emrys just doesn't want you to listen to any of the other episodes because he doesn't want you to hear him getting beaten.
I mean, I don't want to be too contentious.
I know that you're what you're going to say.
There's been 2 episodes so far and I have won both. Categories.
2 episodes of this season, not 2 episodes ever. It's like you're literally trying to erase everything that came before when you just lost and lost and lost.
I'm not erasing anything. I started now, off by saying, and obviously you won. Yeah, so I actually volunteered.
You literally
that
just, you know, sound bites and stuff. You literally just said there's been 2 episodes so far and I've won everything.
Of this season.
You didn't say of this season.
Well, you interrupted me.
Oh, shut up. This is a good start, isn't it?
How is it feeling so far for you being, naught for 4?
I mean, to be honest, again, it just feels like a representation of how I feel in life because I just feel like everything's a bit shit, including obviously my ability to pick films for people. Feel like I don't know what day it is. I can't remember my place in the world or, you know, who I am as a basic human being. All these things that I feel like are mutually felt currently by the majority of people, because it feels like we're still in 2020 and it's been about 5 years. And yeah, but I'm not going to start the podcast in that place. That's where I'm at.
But positive.
But to be honest, I am happy to be coming and doing this episode to talk about some films and have a bit of a chat. And it always makes me feel better. So, huzzah. And I might treat myself to a hot chocolate afterwards.
Ooh.
I'm not making one for you, though. Just me.
Oh.
Just me.
But, I was about to volunteer to make one for both of us,
okay,
but
you do
I
that.
Don't think I should now.
I made you dinner. You can make me hot chocolate.
Okay, fair
there
enough.
There you go.
Yeah.
And this is marriage, dear listeners.
This is marriage.
It's what brings us together. Today.
And if you don't know what that's from,
you should just
shame on
you. Yeah, you should leave
just now. Turn the podcast off
you
right now.
You should leave now if you don't know what
it's
that's
Princess
from.
Bride.
Yes. Yeah. Anyway, how are you doing in your 4 for 4 little,
I mean,
wearing a little paper hat of joy and one of those little streamers.
Yeah. The party blower thing going.
Yeah. Of the things that goes.
Oh, what is that? Like a vuvuzela? Is that what it's called? Something like that. It's, I don't know. I knew if I said that, it would make you laugh.
Like a what?
A vuvuzela.
Bring on the vuvuzelas.
Exactly.
Bless you.
Yeah. I think that's what it's called. I don't know. I feel good. I feel like it's probably not going to last much longer. Especially now I've like rubbed your face in a little bit. It's probably now my luck has run out.
I feel like I've been a much more gracious loser than you were. Because by the time we'd got to, you know, episode after episode of me thrashing you, you literally were just like, I don't like it anymore. I don't like the podcast anymore. I don't want it. I was like, all right. And I'm still here.
This afternoon, I was looking at, because I keep a little tally of how many films have been chosen as best pick, how many films have been chosen as scariest pick, and how many films were chosen as neither. And I've had, like, across all seasons, to break down the boundaries and confusion, I've had 6 films I've chosen for people that they didn't like for either category, and you've had now 4. So if you look across the whole thing, you are doing better than I am in that sense.
Cool.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah,
I'm good. I'm okay. It's a funny old world, isn't it? At the moment, still is.
Yeah.
I was thinking that by the time that we were in February, things might be a bit different, but apparently not. But hey, you know, things are looking up a little bit.
They are.
I mean, like, people we know have had vaccinations.
That's true. That's
if we're going to actually talk about real life stuff, I think it's awesome that finally I know people within my, like, you know, what you call it,
circle?
Hemisphere. Is that what I'm talking about? Yeah, yeah. My circle. Who are starting to get vaccinated, and that's just a really, really positive thing, and I'm very, very happy about that. So I'm focusing on that, and trying to just live with everything else that's going on and just never leave my house again, which is, you know, standard. And at least we've had some fun films to watch while we don't leave our house.
Yes.
So there you go.
I don't think there's much else we've had on to watch since we caught up with people in our last episode.
No, but I would just like to say we mentioned WandaVision last episode, and I would like to reiterate WandaVision tenfold, because it's just brilliant and I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah.
And get yourself a Disney Plus subscription, dear listener.
Hashtag not sponsored by
Disney Plus. But, you know, treat yourself. It's a difficult time, and sometimes a little treat helps you, and a little bit of Disney Plus can go a long way. Just saying.
Agreed.
And watch some WandaVision, and also The Mandalorian if you haven't watched that as well. You know, just treat yourself. But yeah, I'm really enjoying that. It's not really horror related, but
it's not.
I think that there'll be lots of people within the horror hemisphere who are fans of a bit of weird, and it is a bit weird, and I'm enjoying it. Mm. Like me, a bit of weird.
Yeah,
so.
Me too.
Yeah,
me too.
Cool.
Well, talking of treats and treating yourself,
I thought you were going to say talking of a little bit weird.
No,
and I was like, that is a terrible thing to say. How dare you?
You teed me up perfectly for a really lovely transition, and then you just started talking about weird stuff, and I was like, damn it, you've ruined this.
A treat.
I think it's about time for us to introduce our next victim. So please welcome to the podcast, Nicole.
Hello. The weird one weird. Is here.
No, the treat is here.
The treat. There we go. I'll take that. I'll take either, to be fair.
Well, Nicole, thank you so much for agreeing to come on the podcast. It's actually been a bit of a long time in the making. We get all of our victims to fill in a little survey so that we can help the curation process. I think you filled yours in quite a while ago, so I'm glad we finally got round to this.
It was a really long time ago, and I have absolutely no idea what was on it. No clue.
Well,
I don't remember that at all.
Hopefully you haven't changed too dramatically since then, and the films that we've picked for you are in at least some way appropriate. But let's get straight into it. Nicole, tell us a little bit more about your relationship with horror movies.
I love it. I absolutely love it. I haven't always been this way. This is years and years of my dad convincing me. And constantly putting me in front of the TV and being like, watch this, and I'd be absolutely shitting myself and just refusing to watch things for years. And I think he gradually wore me down. I was an absolute scaredy cat when I was young. And I actually, it was probably wasn't until my mid-20s that I actually really started to like it. You know, I used to have nightmares from film trailers that I saw on TV, adverts. Oh my God, adverts. The Judder Man. Do you remember the Judder Man?
Yes.
Oh my God.
It was Smirnoff Ice advert, I want to say.
Oh,
it was some sort of alcohol. But oh my God, he gave me many a nightmare. And there was one actually a few years ago, it might have been within the last 10 years. And I think it was for Phones For You or some sort of phone company. And there was a horrible little girl, like ghost in it, like from The Ring. And it was on primetime TV. It was horrible. But yeah, that gave me nightmares as well. So
I looked up the Judder Man while you were speaking there, and it was a brand of alcohol called Metz, which I don't think exists anymore, but I remember it really vividly. It was really creepy.
He was horrible.
I don't think we've talked about adverts at any point on the podcast.
I don't think adverts have been something that has scared people previously. We've had video games and books and all kinds of random stuff, but never adverts.
Yeah. Well done for being original.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. Well, there was also a Jonathan Creek episode, and I can't remember how old I was, probably about 10. And this must have been on at about 7 or 8 o'clock on a Sunday, because I wouldn't have been allowed up any later to watch it. And it just it scarred me for life, this Jonathan Creek episode. There was this sort of monster that came into somebody's house, and this person hid in, you know, those slatted wardrobes, the wooden slats, like in the doors. So they were hiding in one of those wardrobes, and this thing comes into the house with a massive sword, and he just looks around the room once, puts this sword up one of the slats really slowly, and when he brings it out, all this blood just like pours down this slatted wardrobe. So now I have a fear of slatted wardrobes. And unfortunately, the room that I always slept in my grandma's house growing up, has slatted wardrobes. So that's fun.
Oh, God.
Oh, no.
Do you know what? Emrys is the same with Jonathan Creek. Emrys actually introduced me to Jonathan Creek. It passed me by when I was growing up. And we always used to, when we first like lived together, used to watch things on the computer when we were like going to sleep. Like before bed, we would watch things, and we would sometimes have things playing as we kind of fell asleep. And I just started watching Jonathan Creek, and I was like, oh, this is pretty good. I want to watch all of the episodes. And Emma's like, we are not watching that. We are not watching that at bedtime. No, I'm not going to have that playing before I go to sleep. I'm not having it. I don't like it. And Emma's is like a proper horror freak. Like, he's totally into all of the scary things. But for some reason, Jonathan Creek, he just can't deal with it.
I love it though. Like, I love being scared. And for those of you who don't know, Jonathan Creek is a British BBC series about a guy who is an expert in stage magic and you know, kind of puzzles and solving things, who gets called in to try and understand kind of crazy or outlandish crimes or murders or whatever,
disappearances and things.
Exactly. It's like, it's the, you know, like, this person was locked in a room and they were killed by someone shooting them, but there's no way for anyone to get in and out, that kind of thing.
They drowned, but there's no water and all of that type of stuff.
I was so fascinated when you were describing the episode, because I was thinking, oh, I wonder if it'll be one of the ones that I have that's like etched into my mind, and yours is different than mine. Mine is one of a creepy guy at a window in a house, and another one where they open the door to a cellar and there's a guy just like reaching up. Ugh, really creepy. But I do love a bit of Jonathan Creek.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit more about your relationship with kind of your dad and horror, because that seems like that was the kind of the route into it for you. So how did that go?
I mean, he's always been a huge horror fan, like I say, and he was very much into his Hammer horror back in the day. I think even when he was young, he said that his room was painted black for some time. So I don't think he was a goth, but I think he was just very into anything dark and weird and strange. And so, yeah, when I got to a certain age, obviously, he tried to convince me to watch films with him. A really notable one for me, which has affected my whole life, was when he tried to get me to watch E.T. E.T. is not okay. And I know, Katie, that you agree with me there, because I've heard you talk about E.T. before. He's not okay at all. And it's still not okay. It's still not okay as well.
It's just, oh no, I can't watch E.T. even now. Just thinking about E.T., you're talking about Jonathan Creek, thinking about E.T., I can't think about it for too long, because it will just freak me out and I won't be able to sleep.
My palms are getting sweaty right now, thinking about it, actually. Is that bad?
It feels like you two have quite a lot in common, in the sense that E.T. scares you, but also the fact that you are both a little bit older when you came to horror, mm-hmm. and actually it really freaked you out when you were young and you didn't really kind of go there.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't really remember any one film that got me into it, but I remember as a teenager watching films like I Know What You Did Last Summer and Final Destination, Scream, those sort of films, and actually The Descent was one of my first films, I think, that I really, really enjoyed, and I actually hadn't watched it for a really, really long time, and we watched it a few weeks ago, and I still think it's great. I love that film.
We've covered that on the podcast before, and it is an excellent, excellent horror film. Really, really love The Descent.
It is interesting to think that that's like one of the first films, like proper horror films, that you really enjoyed, because it is really extreme for what it is. Because like, I Know What You Did Last Summer and Scream and Final Destination, they have their moments. In particular, I think Final Destination, although it does get progressively more and more camp with every kind of sequel that they made, there's some really nasty bits in Final Destination that kind of really make your stomach churn. But The Descent is so dark and so just, it's one of those things, because there's no rhyme or reason to kind of what happens in that film, and you just know it's not going to end well. And that's it's brilliant. I love The Descent, particularly because it's so rare to see like a female dominated horror movie, in which all the females are like, you know, kick ass women, even though, you know, awful things happen. They are amazing independent women, which is great.
Yeah. What Lies Beneath is another one as well. That was one of the What Lies Beneath, but I don't actually really remember it that well anymore. But I remember that when I was about 15, 16, I watched it, and I think it was the big thing that all teenagers were watching this film. I just remember a moment in the bath. Is there a minute in the, like, in the bath, is she drowning or something?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's little moments in there, but I don't really remember that film very well. But yeah, films kind of, I suppose, aimed at a teenage sort of audience are ones that sort of got me into it slowly, and then I slowly died inside, so I had to go to something a little bit more scary and a little bit more extreme, so
I love it. You two really are exactly the same.
You know, before long I was onto Hostel, I was onto Saw.
So for you, what makes a horror film a horror film?
That's really tricky, because I think there's so many different types of horror. But I think that the overwhelming feeling that I want to feel when the film is over is that I have to check inside every cupboard, under every bed, before I go to sleep. So that kind of feeling of being unsettled somehow. Not necessarily terrified, but just on edge, unsettled. I want it to make me feel like that.
Nice. I like that. And you've talked about a few things that have freaked you out and a few horror movies that you've enjoyed. Tell us about the first experience you had, or the first one you can remember watching a horror film, and how that went.
The first time I remember being scared by a horror film. Well, I mean, I guess the first time I remember feeling absolutely terrified, I have to talk about E.T. again, because it took my family years to convince me to watch this bloody film. And I remember that my grandma had it, it was on a VHS and it was recorded from the TV. And the first thing on this video was The Snowman. So I would watch The Snowman quite a lot. But when the snowman was coming to an end, I would know that it would soon flip over and you'd be in the first scene of E.T. where they're all sort of in the dark and they're all waddling along, you know, they've just landed. So I would start to get that fear as the snowman ended. So now I have a little bit of a thing with the snowman too, which is lovely.
Our daughter is absolutely obsessed with the snowman at the moment.
Yeah.
Even though it's February, we're just trying to like gradually wean her off the watching snowman. That and other Christmas things that she's obsessed with.
Oh, it is brilliant. I love the snowman. But anyway, when it ends, I get the fear. But when they finally sat me down, it was probably about age 13 because it took that long. I sat there and I had my hands over my ears. I had my eyes closed and I watched the whole thing kind of through, you know, my fingertips, but I didn't enjoy a single moment of it. I don't understand what people are saying when they say that, you know, E.T. is this lovely, lovable character and there's this little boy. And I didn't even understand how this kid, you know, could film these scenes with this prosthetic alien, because it was just the worst thing in the world to me. I hated it. And that's the first memory that I have of being absolutely terrified. And like I say, having to have something in front of my eyes pretty much at all times through it. And when it was over, I said, never again. That's it. I've done it now. I'm never doing it again.
Well done for going back, because a lot of people don't. A lot of people will watch something and then be like, nope, never going back to that again. So well done for facing your fear.
Well, I did, but do you know what? My children aren't watching it.
Brilliant.
Right.
Well, you obviously really love horror, so just give us a little bit to go out on. Just tell us a little bit about like what you love about it, or if you're going to recommend horror to someone who'd never seen a horror film before, what would you say to them?
I would just say that it kind of creates the feeling of adrenaline, doesn't it? I guess it's that old thing of feeling scared and feeling like you're in some sort of danger when there's absolutely no danger at all and you're completely safe. There's some, you know, it gets your heart pumping. It's exciting at the same time as being scary, I guess.
Yeah, I love that. That's exactly how I feel. It's like a safe way of you know, doing something to your body and getting you to react to something and feeling a certain way. But you're actually, you know, you're fine the whole time.
Yeah, and I also do think that a very good horror film is kind of, it's on the same level as fantasy for me. Fantasy is my other genre that I absolutely love, because it completely takes you away from your day-to-day life. And if you're watching a really good horror and you're really scared by it, you're really zoned into it and you're not thinking about anything else but your life at that moment. So I think it really just takes you away.
Yeah, I love that. Bit of healthy escapism. Very nice.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think it is about time for us to reveal the movies that we have curated for you, Nicole. So let's do that right now. The first movie that we have curated for you is Valentine.
He loves me.
Spend this Valentine's Day.
He loves me not.
With someone you love.
He loves me.
Someone you trust.
He loves me not.
And someone you know.
He loves me.
Won't try to kill you.
Will you dance with me? Dance with me? Dance with me? Dance with me?
Remember the kid everybody ignored on Valentine's Day?
Loser!
Well, he remembers you.
God, we were so horrible to that kid.
What do you think happened to him?
Valentine.
And the second movie that we have curated for you is An American Haunting.
In 1818, it began in this house. Now, nearly 200 years later, it's ready to finish what it started.
There's something evil here.
Who are you?
Am I gonna die?
No.
An American Haunting, based on the terrifying true story. Available in rated and unrated versions.
Do you have another nightmare, honey?
Look for it on DVD.
So, Nicole, tell us, it is that point in the podcast for you to tell us, which of us do you think chose which of these films for you?
Wow. Well, I, to be honest with you, I really don't have a clue, but I'm going to go purely on the fact that American Haunting is, it's kind of like a period horror piece. It's like a period drama-ish. And I've heard Katie speak in previous episodes about how she loves a costume drama. And so for that pure reason, because it's all I have, I'm going to go with Katie from An American Haunting, and Valentine is Emrys.
You are correct.
Yay! I'm so happy I got that right.
Good rational reasoning there as well. Mm-hmm. Very nice. Very nice indeed. Well, we are going to go straight into our conversation about these films that we have chosen for you. And we're going to start with the film that I chose for you, which is Valentine. So let me tell you a little bit about Valentine. Valentine was directed by Jamie Blanks and written by Donna Powers, Wayne Powers, Gretchen Berg, and Aaron Harberts. It was released in 2001 and stars a whole big old cast of people, but probably best known among them are Denise Richards, David Boreanaz, Mary Shelton, Jessica Capshaw, Jessica Coffiel, and Katherine Heigl, very briefly as well. And a little synopsis of Valentine. Five women are stalked by an unknown assailant while preparing for Valentine's Day. So, Nicole, over to you. Tell us, what did you think of Valentine?
Well, this actually gave me nostalgic vibes because I think it really reminded me of those films that I've spoken about before. I Know What You Did Last Summer, Scream, Final Destination. It kind of felt on the same sort of level as those for me. So it's really strange that I'd never heard of it before. I'm really surprised because I had never heard of it. And it kind of made me feel like I was 15, 16 years old again, watching one of my first horror films. So that was cool. And I actually think that the not the very beginning, but the bit with Katherine Heigl? I'm not sure.
Heigl.
I think it's Heigl.
Yeah, Katherine Heigl.
We meet her and then I kind of think, okay, you're my protagonist. You're my main character. Okay, we're getting used to you. Oh, no way, she's dead. So, yeah, that sort of reminded me of Scream a little bit.
Yeah, it's true. I think especially because she's probably the best known person in this film now. You think, oh yeah, she'll be the, you know, like, so, you know, I don't know much about this film. It's been chosen for me. She's probably going to be the main character. And she just gets killed. And you're like, oh, okay. Going to be lesser known people that apparently at this point they thought would be more successful or popular. And I don't think have done a great deal since. Although some of them have.
Well, it's almost, I mean, I felt like I was watching the entire cast of Grey's Anatomy in this film.
Yeah.
It's very strange. I was like, oh, look, that person's in Grey's Anatomy and that one's in Grey's Anatomy and they're all friends as teenagers. That's good.
See, the only one that I knew of was Angel from Buffy. What's his name? David Boreanaz? It's just Angel, isn't it? It's just, to our generation, he will never be anything but Angel.
Yeah, I think to some people he's Bones, yeah. But for most people he's Angel.
He's not actually Bones.
Bones. Is he
not?
Oh no, yeah. He's
Bones is
Bones is Buddy.
Boner.
Buddy.
Bones is Buddy. Bones.
His bones is bone buddy because they bone. Yeah.
Who the hell is Bones? Can we just talk about that? Who the hell is Bones?
There's a TV show called Bones, which is about investigating crimes when you have historic remains. So the remains of the person don't give you any indication of like where they've come from and stuff. So it's all about bones, basically. So the woman who is the best person at it, they all call her Bones. And then David Boreanaz is like the cop that works with her, but then eventually they do bone as well. So you know, it's multifaceted.
So it works. The name works on both levels. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love how many just downright awful men there are in this film.
Oh my God. Yes.
Yeah.
I would say this film. Arguably, like, obviously it's a bit of a slasher, it's a bit of like a mystery, but if this film is kind of taking something from the world and going, let me take this thing that is in your life and make it scary, it's just men.
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah, the men are awful, especially that first date scene.
Yes,
him. Jeremy, is that Jason. Meant to... now Jason. I'm confused with this guy. Because is that meant to be the little kid, or is that someone completely different?
He's a red herring, so he happens to have the same initials as the little kid. But yeah, he's just a weird guy. He refers to himself as Jason.
Jason.
Yeah, which is just really odd. And then there's the guy who likes to rhyme. He's like, "Hey, Kate. You want to date Kate?
The one who...
You want to be my mate, Kate?"
Oh, my God.
Was trying on Kate's, you know, underwear and tights. Pantyhose, that's what our American listeners will know those as. Yeah. Tights, pantyhose, whatever. Trying on a woman's tights in her apartment when she's not there. And then when someone comes in being like, "It's not what you think. What do you think that I'm going to think you're doing? What were you doing? Trying to air dry them or something? Like, I don't know." Like,
then you've got creepy art guy who's like trying to just like invite his girlfriend into a threesome without actually asking her about it, which is really weird.
And who spends a whole conversation with another woman just talking to her boobs and being like, "You really make that dress look good."
Yeah. Who else have we
detective,
got? We got
the
detective. He's obviously there to like help them and protect them and solve a crime.
Thinks it's
just
appropriate
like,
to commit sexual assault during one of the interviews. Yeah. You know,
he's like, "What are we can do about this chemistry?" And you're like,
so grim.
There's the guy who's trying to like con one of the women as
got
well.
An internet startup. God, it's been so long since I've heard the term "I've got an internet startup" in a film. That was so funny. I was like, "Oh, that's brilliant." Remember when the internet itself was like a startup thing?
Yeah. You know? And then there's an alcoholic, and then finally a guy who invites a girl upstairs to show her something.
To surprise her.
And the surprise is his penis.
Yeah. I think we all saw that coming.
So yeah, there's some pretty tragic men in this film.
Well, every single man in this film, except for one, obviously, is a red herring. Because it's basically saying, look at how rubbish all of these men are. Every single one of these men could be the person who's killing off all your friends. And that is really it's not nice, actually. It's really creepy, that whole aspect of, as a woman, you literally cannot trust anybody.
So obviously this film's a bit of a kind of a mystery story. So I'm wondering how you found that. Obviously you hadn't seen this before. So how did you find your first viewing of that? And did you guess what was going to happen? Were you surprised by the twist?
Well, I actually thought all along that it was the rich friend. I can't remember her name, but was she the girl that actually did kiss Jeremy at the school dance at the beginning? I always thought that it was her the whole way through. And then when we think it is her and she, you know, falls down the stairs and they rip the mask off Scooby-Doo style and it's, you know, all this hair falls out, I was like, aha, got it right. And then actually when it turned out to not be her, and it was the boyfriend, I was a bit like, oh, Well, that's a bit of an anticlimax. Because I actually thought that they didn't make enough of him in it. I don't know whether I really connected with his character very much, so I didn't care very much that it was him. I think I would have preferred it if it was the woman.
He's kind of barely in the film.
Yeah, like, he's in it for the sake of being the villain.
Yeah.
It's like when you see, like we watched recently Iron Man 3, and Sir Ben Kingsley is in Iron Man 3. To this day, I cannot believe that Sir Ben Kingsley is in Iron Man 3. But you don't put him in the film unless you're going to do something with his character, be it that he's the villain or that, you know, in that film there's a bit of a twist and stuff. Like, but I think that by casting Angel in Valentine, you don't cast Angel in something unless they're in there for a reason. So I kind of...
It was a bit of stunt casting.
Yeah, it's like, look at this person that you're... You know, I mean, he was the man of his decade. You know, for a certain kind of viewer, he would be like the love interest because he was so well known for being in Buffy and then being in Angel. So I think it's kind of a bit obvious that you're going to be doing something with him, because, like you say, they hardly use him at all during the film, other than the fact that he keeps showing up and being like, hey. I'm really sexy and like hi.
I'm brooding like I always am in everything.
I'm so brooding, you know. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, I think they should have made more of him.
One of the kind of criticisms levied against this film is that Jeremy, as he is when he's a little boy, or Adam, as he is when he's David Boreanaz, he seeks revenge against the girls who rejected him, rather than against the boys who like
beat the shit out,
took his clothes off,
which is exactly what I said.
Punch on him.
That's exactly what I said when we were watching this film. I was like, oh yeah, because of course the man goes after the women who literally just said no to him because they didn't want to dance with him and give him a kiss, rather than the guys that beat the living shit out of him.
There is a bit in the film though; it's quite subtle, but it's in the script where the girls are talking about the head of that group of bullies died recently under mysterious circumstances. So it kind of makes you think he probably already kind of took care of the main part of that group of people at least. One of my favorite things in this is you have this opening scene where, you know, it's this awkward boy with glasses and kind of like bad teeth and everything who's going around and asking all these different girls if they'll dance with him at a Valentine's Day dance. And obviously now we know that David Boreanaz, Adam, is the person who ends up killing them all. The way that they respond to him saying, hey, will you dance with me, directly reflects the way that he dispatches them later on in the film. So Shelley, who's, what's
Catherine
that?
Catherine Heigl.
Catherine Heigl, thank you. She says, in your dreams, loser. And she dies lying down in a sleeping position. Yeah. Lily just says, ew. And she is the one who gets the maggots in the chocolates and her body gets chucked in a dumpster. Paige says, I'd rather be boiled alive. And she gets thrown into a hot tub.
A hot tub.
Is electrocuted. And then Dorothy, who's the like you said, the rich one who he actually did kind of kiss, says he attacked me. He makes everyone else believe that she is the one who has done all of these murders.
Yeah.
And then the one that survives and that he's obviously in a relationship with is Kate, who says
maybe later,
Jeremy. Yeah. So they do get to dance together later. Yeah. It's a lot later. I love that kind of structure and that formula that's really kind of interconnected with that first scene.
Yeah, I really like that. I wish I'd noticed that. Can I just say as well, for Jeremy, what a glow up.
Very, very true.
I mean, very true. You know, for all his faults, at least, you know, he went down looking good.
One of the other things that I really love in this film is there's a bit where one of the women is like, you know, concerned, curious about
Adam.
Or about Jeremy.
Yeah.
And she goes onto the internet and she does a web search for Jeremy Milton.
and there's no results.
No responses.
There's no results on the whole of the internet about not a single Jeremy Melton in the world ever. And I was like, you can tell that this was made in the 90s because on the whole internet, there is nothing about that name. And it's like, yeah, I wonder how many times in your life you could search something on like a search engine and be like, oh, the internet is empty. There's nothing.
Yeah, I mean, when you Google your own name on the internet, right, it always comes up with just loads of shit.
Nicole, how did you find the kind of creepy Cupid mask as a, you know, as a kind of slasher killer identity?
I quite liked it. But then, again, I'm a bit confused because at the very beginning, when Jeremy's being beaten to shit, some little kid comes through the crowd wearing that mask. So are we to assume that he was then given that mask?
That's a really good question, actually. I noticed that as well. And I don't really know why that was in there either.
Yeah. I mean, I think when you start trying to, for as much as we enjoy to like dissect things, because it's the type of people that we are when we watch, you can't think too much into too much with this type of a film, because you could basically be like, oh yeah, at some point he was given that mask and then that did, or did he, like, you know, was that the first person that he then attacked afterwards and he took the mask from the kid who was watching him from the film or whatever. It's just like, it's yeah, if you think too much about it, you could just go around in circles forever. And I think in the end you have to go, is it actually worth it for the film? I don't think it's designed to be dissected on that level, is it?
No.
Much as it's entertaining, not to you know, knock it for entertainment value, but if we start picking holes, there's going to be nothing left.
So the other thing that really made me laugh while we were watching this is the killer, who obviously we don't know who it is for most of the film, every time they kill someone, they have a nosebleed. And right at the beginning of the film, Katie was like, isn't there that thing where, like, some people, when they get aroused, they have a nosebleed? So
what?
Every single time someone died, all I was thinking was that person's just like,
got a,
you know,
boner.
Yeah.
Talking about bones again.
I have never heard of someone having a nosebleed when they're turned on.
I don't know where this is. I mean, I spend way too much time reading stupid shit on the internet, and this just came into my head. And I said it to Emrys at the beginning of the film, and then I was just like, I can't not think about this now. And I do like the idea that he's that creepy, though, that he gets a nosebleed whenever he's, like, you know, enjoying himself.
Yeah.
It's a bit like the Hulk, but creepy. You know, the Hulk the Hulk can't have sex because otherwise he turns into the Hulk. This guy's a bit like that, but with, you know, being a creepy murdering type.
Yeah.
With a nosebleed.
Like I said before, though, I think it's really cool the way that this film kind of plays on, I guess, you know, women's fear of how creepy and awful and freaky men can be, even if they're people that you trust or that you feel like you know well, or if they're complete strangers or real weird people. And it's actually the person, it's the character in this case who turns out to be the killer, who is the one that they know the most and that they have known the longest, turns out to be the one that's behind it all. That is quite creepy, I think. Obviously, it is a relatively light-hearted kind of, like, in, you know, let's put this on and be a bit scared and have a bit of fun. But I do actually think at its core, that is quite a scary idea.
Yeah.
I mean, we've all walked home with our keys in between our knuckles, right? I used to do that at uni all the time. If you're ever on your own, ever, you have your keys in between your knuckles just in case, just ready to strike.
Yeah, same. Every time I used to walk home on my own from college, I used to do that. And I think, because I was thinking about this when we finished watching this film, and I actually think that it's pretty interesting in terms of its message, which is that, you know, basically men are assholes it is that idea of, you know, men being in a position where they could become killers. And I think that that is quite progressive for a film in the 90s to basically be like, oh, by the way, girls, you're not safe because all these men are like evil. They're capable of evil and you need to take care of yourself and stuff. But I think the difference between if this film was being made now in comparison to when it was made is that there's this massive undertone for every single one of these girls that they are being treated like this because they deserve it, because they were horrible to somebody when they were like 15, 16 years old at school, when they literally said to someone, actually, no, I'm not interested. And granted, they didn't do it in a way that was very nice, but just because you're not very nice to somebody doesn't then give them free rein to come after you with a knife and like kill you 13 years later. And it's just like there is this kind of this attitude that, oh, look at these horrible girls who are really nasty to somebody. They weren't very nice, so they deserve the fact that they then get bumped off. And then these other, oh, when they grow up, they're very sexual, which obviously means that they're evil and dirty because girls that like sex deserve to get murdered. And, you know, I think that is a very 90s way, because I do think it's quite a strong female cast in terms of you have all of these women who are being preyed upon, but there is just this massive feeling that they're getting their comeuppance in a way, that they kind of, you know, well, if you'd been a nicer person and you'd smiled at people and you'd let people dance with you and kiss you, even if you didn't want to, then this wouldn't have happened to you, you know? So it's weird.
I don't think it's trying to say that, though. I don't think it's justifying.
Well, I would argue that this
is an acceptable reason to do these things at all.
I would argue that you watch this film as a man, my love, and you don't know what it's like to live in the women's world.
It's definitely trying to be like, watch out, but I don't think it's trying to say that this is acceptable behavior.
Not necessarily, but I do think it definitely, it does have, and many, many films of the 90s do, you know, the way that women are portrayed in a lot of 90s films is either being a whore or a virgin. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, It's not necessarily saying that it's okay that they're all getting murdered, but there's definitely a very strong undertone that they wouldn't have been put in this position if they'd just been nicer, in inverted commas, you know? And so it doesn't matter if whether someone's going, yeah, it's right, yeah, let's watch them all get murdered and that's fantastic. But yeah, which doesn't sit well with me. I don't know if you can tell that from my my outburst about 90s films in general, but yeah.
Yeah, I feel like if it was made now, it would, like, the girls would kick a bit more ass, maybe.
Yeah, agreed.
Definitely.
I also think it'd probably be a bit less undertones of humour as well. Like I feel like there's this, like, yeah, this is funny, and it's like, no, it's not.
It's really not funny not to really watch someone funny. Get, like, in a hot tub. That's the worst one, isn't it? I think of all the deaths,
that is the worst
all
one.
The murder. The hot tub is just horrible. That's, yeah, it's creepy as. Can we just talk about one more thing, though? How many people get killed in that girl's house before someone even notices that one person has been killed in her house? I was sitting there saying, how big is your freaking house? I mean, that's how you know, on the scale of I've got a massive house to this house is just too big, is that there's like five people at least who've got killed in this house before anyone's even noticed that anyone's gone missing, let alone that there are, you know, dead bodies everywhere.
And it was just when you said that there's the bit where the kind of like the girl who was like previously being ripped off by the con artist guy is like going through the house, and the killer just walks in carrying
another body.
Maid.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, there you go. That's finally someone's seen it.
At last.
The very last comment that I wrote down is, there's some lovely ways to go in this. I mean, one of them was the hot tub. And another memorable one is when one of them get their face rammed on a shard of broken glass in the shower.
Ooh,
that was also very lovely. But the hot tub one actually reminded me a little bit of the sunbeds in Final Destination, where they get trapped in sunbeds.
We talked about that as well. Yeah. When we were watching it, we were like, what film is that?
I said Final Destination as well.
You did, yeah. My personal favorite is when the killer, who's obviously dressed as Cupid, shoots three arrows into one of them for the bow and arrow. I just thought that was like, they were like, we've got to put it in somewhere, so let's have it here.
I mean, that's skills, to be fair. Three in one.
Right, well, I think it is about time for us to move on to the conversation around our next film, which is the film that Katie chose for you, Nicole. So, Katie, tell us a little bit about An American Haunting.
So, An American Haunting was released in 2005, and it has a pretty impressive cast, actually. Big names, big heavy hitters, starring Donald Sutherland, Sissy Spacek, also Rachel Hurd-Wood, who I know as being Wendy Darling in like the more recent live action adaptation of
Peter. You say more recent, it was in 2003, which is the 2 years recent before this film came out.
I know, no, but I, you know what I mean, it's not the Disney one that came out like 100 years ago. And yes, it was directed by Courtney Solomon, who also co-wrote it with Brent Monaghan. Brent Monaghan wrote the original novel that this particular film is based on. A little synopsis for you for An American Haunting, based on the true events of the only case in the US history where a spirit caused the death of a man. And yes. Tell us, Nicole, what did you think of An American Haunting?
Well, again, this is one that I'd never heard of before, which is, it's crazy that you picked two that I'd never heard of, which I loved. I really like the time hop back to the 19th century. I wasn't expecting that at the beginning. So I really like, you know, the finding of the journal and then the hopping back, because like I've said before, I don't know if I've said it before, actually, but I love a period drama, and anything costume drama, I'm sold. I love it. And I also think that it's a little bit more spooky when it's a costume drama as well, because everything was a little bit darker. Everything's by candlelight, so everything seems a little bit more creepy. And I also thought that everything was just quite grey in this film, yeah, which I quite liked. Everything just felt a bit spooky. One of the first things I've written down for this one is little girl ghost. Nope. I don't like little girl ghosts. I do not like them at all. Ever since The Ring, oh my God, any little girl ghost and you just no. But yeah, I like the era that it was set in. I did think that once, it's Betsy, isn't it, the little girl? I did think that once she started to show signs of possession, it all happened very, very quickly. You know, I think we were only about 20 minutes into the film and she was already being dragged into the air by her hair. And I was like, oh, God, how much further can this go now? Like, we've already got to this point, which is usually like the end of a possession film when it gets to that level. So I thought it escalated quite quickly. And I think I would have quite liked it to escalate a little bit slower than it did, almost. Because it's all those little creepy moments where you don't actually see very much or hear very much that I find the most scary, you know, like the little creaky doors and the footsteps in the middle of the night. And, you know, with, oh God, what's it called? Paranormal Activity. It all happens really, really slowly, doesn't it? And that's what makes that film for me really scary, because we've all woken up in the middle of the night thinking, shit, what the hell is that? You know, it happens to everybody. So I think that it all happened a bit quickly for me in this film.
I hadn't seen this film before either, Nicole, and I definitely got the vibe that it kind of, this is quite a famous haunting in America, and it kind of gave me the vibe that it was kind of expecting that you already knew some stuff about what was going to happen, which I didn't. And also, I think part of the reason why I'm kind of rationalizing why they got there a little bit earlier is, if this is modern day, then, you know, it's much easier to prove things and have people believe you about things now than it was at this point. So, like, they're at a point where they have seen her physically lifted into the air by someone apparently grabbing her hair that they can't see and then smacking her about the face. And the next scene is four men in a room saying, yeah, but it probably wasn't really.
Well,
like,
to be fair, it's one of them saying it's the teacher, which I thought was pretty hilarious in terms of going with like stereotype. The teacher who is literally like having these other three men whom he actually like really respects and who are like big names in this particular town, and they're like, you know, they're not known for being, you know, kind of crazy or just talking crap. And he's like, no, but it was dark. It was at nighttime. So someone must have just been holding her up, which I thought was one of the most funny things, that the teacher is like, no, I'm not gonna believe that there's like a spirit coming. Someone must have been there. You just didn't see them because it was dark, which was, yeah, pretty interesting. It does go again to kind of stereotypes of ghost films, which is when you have the guy who is the practical, I don't believe that this is going to happen, and he ends up being the one who I think becomes really deeply embedded in the whole thing and believes in it more than anybody else. By the time you get to kind of the end, he's the one who's like, no, we have to get away from this spirit, in inverted commas.
The main thing that I learned from this film is, if your parents are President Snow from The Hunger Games and Carrie, you're basically fucked.
Yeah.
Like, there's you've got no chance. You got no chance. Like,
no.
It's you. Yeah, it's going to be a bad life. I'm sorry. Just be ready for that.
Yeah, yeah. And he's just as evil in this, of course, as he is in The Hunger Games as well.
Yeah.
In the end.
I was going to say, I think one of the reasons why, as well, that we get to that kind of pinnacle of haunting as quickly as we do, I think, number one, this is a very, very well documented haunting in the US. It's one of those hauntings that has been like routinely referenced through the ages. Like, people just haven't been able to let it go. And in particular, it is because it, you know, the death of the father, played by Donald Sutherland, he did die in real life. And I think it's like, you know, pretty much one of the only hauntings in history where someone has been seen to die, at least in US. And so that's one thing, obviously, that it's quite well known. But also, this isn't a conventional haunting, because the ghost that's haunting isn't conventional. And the actual kind of story that they're trying to focus on is not to do with the haunting. So it's a little bit, I must admit, it does feel a little bit strange in terms of how they've put the structure together, because it does suddenly, you're like full blown, like, oh my God, there's a ghost and it's doing God knows what to this little girl. Because it's really nasty what happens to Betsy in this film, and they don't pull any punches with how they show that on screen, which is pretty intense. But the point is that she's, you know, I mean, spoilers, massive spoiler, massive twist, she's actually haunting herself to a certain extent, because the point is her father abused her, and there's a whole sequence where they say part of her soul died that day, and it's this part of her soul that is kind of tormenting her so that the truth can come out, so that she can remember what happens, so that she can then take her revenge on her father, which is, yeah, it's, I think it's not an expected turn of events at all, I think.
I think one of the things I really struggled with in this film is that I took the bait of the red herring in this, which is, oh, he sold some land to someone and charged them 20% interest. Usury. Yeah. You've lost your good name, so we're going to haunt you. I was like, that is the most rubbish, terrible shit motivation
for haunting
someone that I've ever heard. So I was just like, I just don't really care. Yeah. And I just kind of really, really switched off. And then when you get to the end, where you have this massive reveal where you're like, so he was like, raping her and abusing her, and she's actually the one who's kind of like been like, you know, haunting herself or getting this spirit to get revenge for what he's done, and the mother's in on it and all that stuff. I was like, oh, this is amazing. But that's literally all delivered in like 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And I feel like the amount of time they spent on different things is completely off in this film. There's a great story here, but the way that it's told isn't great. And I also really struggled with the character development. I just didn't really care about the characters until we were like right at the end, and it was already kind of too late for me.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. I think that, like you said, the story is, when you get to the end, it's great because you do not see that coming at all. But it's a bit disjointed, and it doesn't spend enough time on some things and too much time on others. And yeah, I have to agree with you there. Although it is still quite creepy.
No, it benefits from having a stellar cast dealing with the kind of clunky aspects of it. And I think the reason that I would still say it's worth watching as like a haunting kind of ghost film is that I do think that it's interesting in terms of rewatching it with the knowledge of everything that's going on. I think it's one of those films that maybe on a first viewing, because I remember very distinctly my first viewing of this film was just that I couldn't stop thinking about it afterwards. And that's always my kind of bar by which I kind of judge whether or not a film is worth my time, is that for all its problems, it does kind of hook into you a little bit, and you suddenly kind of go, oh God, I can't deal with thinking about all of these things. And then obviously it kind of, you know, it starts with a flashback and it ends with a flash forward to modern day. And the idea is that this ghost is basically there for all children who are going through similar things that Betsy Bell went through back in the 19th century or 18th century. I can't remember which century it is, but it's like that's kind of, you know, talking about not liking child ghosts, it's like that is probably one of the most compelling child ghosts that I've ever heard of, is a child ghost that's literally there to scare the shit out of people so that they stop mistreating children. Like, that's pretty intense.
I feel like I want this film to be a bit more like The Orphanage. Like, it's that kind of like, it's not what you're expecting. It's not like malicious haunting. It's actually like vengeful haunting for real bad wrongdoing. And I really do like that about it. And I also really love the introduction of the like the young girl whose face you don't see the way throughout the film, and then at the end she looks up and it's her younger self. I think that is really powerful. It's like that that bit of her that she lost, or that bit of her that was corrupted by what happened, has come back to help her and to help others. And I think that's a really powerful kind of positive story for people who've gone through like abuse or you know, like awful things like this.
I do think we have to take a moment to mention Sissy Spacek's face in this film. I just watching this film, I was like, good God, if there was ever a woman who was just built for horror, like she has Carrie face, because that's why she was cast as Carrie, because she's, no one will ever be more Carrie than Sissy Spacek is. But her face is just, the amount of shock and emotion that she can portray by doing absolutely nothing just hits me to the core every single time, because she just is, I just adore her. And I love the relationship that her and Donald Sutherland kind of have in the film. And it becomes even more horrible when obviously you realize, I think her character, it hit me more now as a parent myself, where there's that moment where she's like, you know, mother always slept really soundly, and you didn't, you don't even notice when I get out of bed. And it's that the mother didn't know. And when she finds out, that's when Donald Sutherland, Mr. Bell, is not going to be hanging around much longer because mum's here and she's just sitting in the corner watching and just being like, yeah, you fucking piece of shit. Like,
there's also like three or four scenes where like Betsy's being like haunted or pulled around or something's happening to her. And there's just all of these scenes of people holding Sissy Spacek back.
Yeah.
Like she's like, no. And they're like, no, don't. And I'm like, why are you holding her back? She wants to go and help her. Why? Like, yeah. What are you doing? Yeah. It's just that. It got to a point where I was like, oh, they're going to hold her back again. And then it happened.
There we go. There is a bit where he's writing, like, it doesn't matter what they do. It makes it worse if they try and interfere. So that's kind of why. But they don't show that very early when they're just like, no, Sissy Spacek, leave your daughter alone in this room with the door shut with a ghost coming in and tormenting her. Like, you know, just sit outside. Just be quiet, Sissy Spacek. But no.
Nicole, I'm curious, did you know going into this that this was based on a true story?
No, I'd never heard of it before at all.
Do you think, like, because I was thinking, obviously, at the end, it says this is based on true events. They do that kind of like, we're dropping this thing, and you're like, really?
Every time you see that, that's what gives me chills, because it just adds a whole other level to things, doesn't it?
Well, I would say this is, in terms of true events, just to set everyone's mind at rest, the in inverted commas true events are the haunting of the Bell Witch, which is very, very documented, like I said. And it's something that, I don't know, people back in the day must have not had very much to do, because when there was a haunting, people used to go and like bear witness to a haunting in someone's house. Like, just random people, members of the public and stuff, used to just rock up to someone's house and be like, I hear you've had a haunting, can I come and like see if it's actually real, and then I'll write a testimony to say that I see it, and I had, you know, I'm not your friend or whatever, and you haven't paid me to do it. And I was like, there is no amount of money in the world that you could give me to go and like witness a haunting at somebody's house. Like, how bored would you have to be? But yeah, basically there were a lot of testimonies about this particular haunting and about the hat that it was legit and that type of thing. And that it was specific to a father and a daughter were the main focus of it. Pretty much everything else that's added into this film is like fictionalized. And I think it's almost like, because it's such a well-known haunting, just that it kind of happened and historically it was these people, I think it was almost someone coming in and being like, I'm going to write a reason as to why it happened. I'm going to explain away all of the unexplainable things. And whilst I do think that that gives it a lot of twists and turns and intrigue, I sometimes actually think that it's not knowing that makes something scarier. So maybe they kind of missed a trick in terms of how scary this could have been by not just explaining it away in the way that they did and being like, and now I'm going to tie it up in a little ribbon. And there, that's the nice little story of this particular haunting. And that's exactly why it happened. The end.
Right, well, we've come to the point in the podcast where it is our time to explain to you why we chose these films for you, and I'm going to go first. So, Nicole, I chose Valentine for you. I do sometimes find it a little bit harder when we have guests on the podcast who really love horror, because it's just that what I could give you is so, so broad. So I'm actually trying to take a leaf out of Katie's book and just find one thing and really, really like try to connect to that. I think also the fact that I know you and we've known each other for quite a long time definitely probably did give me a little bit of an advantage potentially. And a bit of it was just that I wanted to give you some good like 90s noughties nostalgia. You said in your survey and you've said in the podcast that that was the time when you were kind of getting into horror. And I know that was like a really big bonding thing with your dad. And I actually thought this was a slightly lesser known film that came out around that time that I actually really enjoyed, even though it does have some flaws to it. And I kind of was banking on the fact that you hadn't seen it. So I'm glad that I was right in the sense that you hadn't. I also know how close you are with like your group of girlfriends kind of from growing up and from when we were at uni together as well. So I thought you'd be able to kind of put yourself into it. But it was the one thing that you said in your survey, which was that being left with a feeling of unease after viewing. So you need to check under the bed and in the wardrobe. So I wanted to pick a film for you that was taking something that would make the trusted men in your life that you love or the people that you walk down the street next to just be a bit creepy and maybe kind of leave that like bad taste in your mouth, but mainly just hitting that hard nostalgia vibe. And that's why I chose Valentine for you.
Well, I definitely did.
Well, I picked An American Haunting for you. I feel the same as Emrys, that sometimes it's difficult to pick films for someone who says, oh, I love horror films, because it gives you a very, very broad spectrum of which to pick from. And I think the thing that I, when I was reading your questionnaire and from obviously when we've had this conversation today, I do feel like we have a lot of kind of interests and things in common, particularly regarding kind of what scares us and that type of thing. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna go with more of a gut feeling rather than getting too specific as to what's on the questionnaire. But one thing that I did notice that you mentioned in terms of your likes and loves of films was that you did specify that you do really enjoy history films based in history. So I thought, okay, so why not go for something that's more kind of costume drama-esque? And three of the types of horror that you specifically said that you enjoyed were paranormal, haunted houses, and ghosts and spirits. And I thought, well, what films do I have that I haven't yet done? Because I have done quite a few costume dramas that are like haunted houses and spirits and ghosts. And for some reason, this one just popped up in my head. And I was like, again, I like to pick films that I don't think that people have seen, because I always think it's more interesting when you don't know anything about a film. And this is a film that I haven't really met many people that have seen it or know about it. So I thought it's a pretty good chance that you probably haven't seen it. And it just ticked some boxes in terms of the different types of films that you said that you had enjoyed. And I also hoped that it would give you a bit of a shock and a bit of a twist. So that is why I picked An American Haunting for you.
Right. Well, it has come to the point in the podcast where we've got two important questions to ask you. And I'm going to ask you the first one right now. So, Nicole, which of these two films scared you the most?
I'm gonna have to go with An American Haunting. Because of the little girl ghost, she really freaked me out, especially right at the beginning when the girl is running through the woods and she runs into her house and she goes into her bedroom and you think, oh, she's in her bedroom now, she's safe. Nope.
She's not safe.
Yeah, there were more creepy moments in An American Haunting for me, definitely. I think Valentine has a certain, you're right in terms of it does make you feel a little bit uneasy in terms of, you know, we've all been walking down the street on our own at night and there's that feeling of, you know, is someone watching me? But in terms of scare, yeah, I'd go with the spooky one every time, I think.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I think I have to agree with you on that front. All right, well, second question, and the big question for you is, which of these two films was the best curated horror pick for you?
I'm going to have to go with the one that scared me the most, which is An American Haunting.
Oh my good God.
There you go. You can have one, Katie.
Yay. I'm genuinely really, really surprised and really pleased and yay, yay.
I did really, I enjoyed Valentine. I enjoyed the nostalgic element of it and I like that I found a different film of that sort of calibre, but I would always pick the one that scared me the most, definitely.
Yeah, that's totally good. I think that's what you've got to be looking for, especially when you're big into horror, like I know you are.
Yay.
You're on the scoreboard.
Yay.
There you go.
The tables have turned back to their rightful turning. No, I do think I agree when it comes to what I look for in a horror film. I would have probably gone with an American Haunting as well, because whilst Valentine, I found it entertaining, which is hilarious, because if I had watched this film when it came out, Jesus Christ, I wouldn't have been able to sleep. And now I'm just like, just a guy with a knife. What's so scary about a guy with a knife and a bow and arrow and a massive drill and a, you know, whatever else he uses, whilst, yeah, like creepy children, ghosts. I'm like, no, thank you very much. But yeah.
Cool. Well, we have reached the end. So all we have left to do is just say a massive thank you to Nicole. Thank you, Nicole.
Thank you, Nicole.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure. I've really enjoyed it. And it's been a pleasure to do something during lockdown that's, you know, that's different to going for a walk and cooking dinner.
Making banana bread.
I haven't done any of that yet, actually, surprisingly.
Yeah, I totally skipped the whole sourdough starter thing. I feel like we should do that at some point, but we haven't done that yet.
I'm not making you a sourdough starter. Just saying. Like, you're looking at me like that's something that I need to take on top of everything else that I'm currently doing, and I'm just putting it out there right now. There's no sourdough starter for you. No.
Oh, okay. I tried.
Thank you for joining us on the Curators of Horror. We'd love to hear from you and what you thought of Valentine and An American Haunting. Which did you think was the best movie?
Are there any other horror movies that you'd like to recommend for our guest, Nicole?
You can let us know what you thought over on Instagram at Curators of Horror, or you can email us at curatorsofhorror@gmail.com.
Head on over to our Instagram to vote for your favourite movie and to tell us which one scared you the most.
We'll be back next week to reveal our next curations, and in 2 weeks with our next main episode.
We really hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, rate, review us, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
And if you didn't, well, I mean, you've made it to the bitter end, so it can't have been that bad, right?
It's such a good point.
Yeah.
I mean, why would people be still listening now if they hate it?
Yeah.
Why would you still listen?
The other reason I chose this film, by the way, is it's like Valentine's Day around this time of year, so let's be topical.
Oh. See what you did there.
So romantic. See what you did there.
Thank you so much, Nicole.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Katie.
Thank you, Emrys.
Thanks for listening, and we hope you have a horrifying week. And happy Valentine's Day.
I hope a creepy child ghost doesn't come after you.
If you get some chocolates from a stranger, don't eat them.
I mean, whoever eats chocolates from a stranger is a stupid person anyway. Come on. Could have dropped them on the floor or something.